Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the 2017 Home Education Conference, held in Williamsburg, Virginia.
Visual art is really actually an important thing for us to incorporate into an educational experience, right? And it often is the thing that's taken out first. In a public school, when the funding gets low, they're going to take out the art program and then maybe start taking out the music program. So what is art anyway? What do you guys think of when we say art?
Something I don't enjoy or want to do.
I'll just be honest, I'm sorry.
Right.
That's why I'm here,
so like why you're here is so that I can maybe convince you that it was something worth doing, right?
Well, I know I need to. I just don't know how.
Right.
And maybe help light the fire.
Yeah. Well, and so I can feel the same way about math, right? But all of these things are super related. Okay? Art and math are related, and science and all of these things. What else does anyone think of when? Just a visual representation of something.
Beauty.
I think that's really important that we... What's that?
A big mess.
Yes.
Expression.
So, right, we have this huge brain and a nervous system that is really throughout our whole body. And this front part, our frontal lobe, contains our language centers. And those develop, right, and we start communicating with language. But there is a whole lot of our experience that is below those levels of cognition. But it's still a real experience that we have. We have emotions. We have things that are part of our human experience that need to be expressed and experienced that cannot be addressed with words and numbers. They just can't, right? So I just took a Merriam-Webster definition, and this is kind of what we'll be talking about today. The expression or application of human creative skill and imagination, typically in a visual form, such as painting or sculpture, producing works to be appreciated primarily for their beauty or emotional power. Right? So we can make art for art's sake. And it's a human creative skill. Creativity and making is an innate human capacity. We have a need to create because we are children of the creator of the universe. It is part of who we are to create things. And it is a unique trait that we have as human beings, that we have a drive to create, that we take all of the chaos and create something new out of it that hasn't ever existed before. And it doesn't matter whether it's going to be displayed in an art museum or everyone else is going to think it's beautiful, that act of creating something is an essential human experience we all need to have. And our children need to have that experience of creating something on their own. I love this quote from President Monson. God left the world unfinished for man to work his skill upon. God gives to man the challenge of raw materials, not the ease of finished things. He leaves the pictures unpainted, and the music unsung, and the problems unsolved, that man might know the joys and glories of creation. Because God is a creative being. And we are his children. And he wants to partner with us, and he wants us to understand our own capacity and power. Right? He could just give us barrels of oil. He could just make beautiful buildings for us, right? Or make it some way that plants grew into shelters, right? He could have designed the world that way, but he didn't, because he respects our spiritual potential. And our powers of creativity are our spiritual potential, right? And so this earth is a laboratory for that, for us to practice that. Before there was even written language, human beings were making art. It is an innate drive, right? Before they even had built shelters, they're living in caves, and they decorate them with things that are meaningful to them and in a way to process what it is that they experience, right? And it's a record. It's an expression. Maybe it was a ritual and a way to worship. We don't know why these cave paintings were made. These are the caves in Lascaux, France. But these are the things that were really important to them, the animals that gave them food and clothing, right? And they're on the walls. They've been on the walls of the caves for thousands and thousands of years before there was ever written language, because they were driven to create something. Art helps us observe details. This is a watercolor painting by Albrecht Dürer. But it helps us really look at things. Art helps us make order out of chaos. We just can take a lump of mud and turn it into something beautiful and useful, right? That is a human activity. Art helps us have a shared experience with the people around us. This is the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. So it can create a sense of awe, majesty, beauty, but it's not just one person's experience. Everyone in that building sees it at the same time and together. And it can create a experience for a community. And before, people were widely literate, right? It was the art that was the teacher in the churches. Art helps us to really see things and not just look at them. So these are Monet's paintings, some of Monet's paintings of the Rouen Cathedral. And he just set up his easel in the same place at different times of day and painted it, the exact same thing, right? But he was really seeing what was there and recording the color and the light and what his experience was that through that and processing it. And it took time to make that happen. Art helps us be playful. This is a painting by Paul Klee. And to just find some whimsy. It doesn't have to represent anything. And it might only be meaningful to the person that made it, right? It helps us to worship. This is Carl Bloch. And it helps us to explore possibilities. This is Vasily Kandinsky. It helps us to make comparisons and connections, and to be able to show those in our own unique way that maybe no one else really would get unless we could find some way to represent it. It helps us to ponder. This is Mark Rothko, and he painted these big color-filled paintings. They're, floor-to-ceiling huge.
But it was so that you would stand up close and see this and just feel the energy of whatever it was, that whatever color it was, right? But he was really trying to explore a spiritual experience beyond words, you know? It was an exploration and a really pondering. So it's not always necessarily the product, but it's the process. It helps us to create beauty in our everyday lives. These are the women of Gee's Bend in Alabama. And in, you know, like starting in the 90s, art collectors started like being really interested in these women's quilts that they have been in this community making since the times of slavery. And now they've had exhibitions in all of the modern art museums. Just taking the scraps of the things that they used to have and repurposing them. But creating beauty in their everyday life with what they already had. And it helps us to express things that are beyond words. This is Vincent van Gogh's Starry Night, which I'm sure you've all seen. Picasso said, "Every child is an artist. The problem is how to remain an artist when we grow up." Because we're scared of things. We come up against our fear at some point. And I know for me as a mom, it's the fear of the mess, usually. But little children just draw and draw and draw. Just like those early humans in the caves with their charcoal, little children like to make marks. It's an innate human activity. And they want to do it repeatedly and repeatedly. And I just can't get over my cute little hunter's lips. Look at those cute little lips. And then they draw and draw and draw. I'm going to go back. So Mo Willems, who wrote like the cat and the elephant books, the pigeon books, right? He will go and share things in classes within schools. And the teachers always want him to get the children to draw. But he says 99.9% of the time, the teachers don't participate in the drawing, right? The teachers won't participate. So I want you to keep that in mind. So part of the reason it's so important for us to make art a part of our homeschool is because we want our children to develop the habits of an artist, because they already are an artist as children. And they have a whole lot of innate curiosity and creativity, right, that we don't want them to lose as they grow. We don't want them to lose that. So one of the first habits of an artist is the ability to envision, to find problems, and then identify questions, to do a little bit of research, and then visualize in their mind some possibilities. And this could be as simple as, how can I take this old water bottle and this cereal box and connect them together in a way that I can make it look like a rocket ship, right? That could be finding a problem, okay? And then they can identify questions. What things could I use? Can I just set it on top? Will it stick? Will this kind of tape stick to these two materials, right? But this is the kind of process they're going through when they're envisioning what it is they want to make, and then coming up against the problems to solve, okay? And it's not scripted. It's just, I want to make this, and I've got these problems to solve, and letting them explore those. Another habit of an artist is the ability to engage and persist. So you identify those problems and ask some questions,
and then you solve the problems. Well, if I just use scotch tape to hook my water bottle to the bottom, to this box I want to be the bottom of my rocket ship, when I lift it up, it falls apart. So maybe duct tape will work better. Okay, that's just a problem solving without being scripted, with a lot of experimentation. And then, right, they can revise and refine and reinvent things. So they might just get sick of the rocket ship and want to make it something else. Or they try one material, it doesn't work, so they can try another and just keep working at something until they figure it out. They get to plan and organize and then ponder and ruminate about things for a while, right? Maybe they just leave a project and just let their brain work on it. Start to infer and understand, to develop focus, to take risks and work until completion. Another habit of an artist is to develop a craft, to really learn to use tools and materials and artistic conventions. So an artistic convention could be like perspective, one-point perspective, and teaching how to draw everything to a vanishing point. That would be an artistic convention. Or elements of composition and how to find balance, symmetrical balance versus asymmetrical balance. That could be an artistic convention. And then tools and materials could be, you know, like I have a 9-year-old who's a master of the material of duct tape. Or it could be that someone's really good with graphite and using a pencil and drawing on a piece of paper. But finding a material and using that over and over to refine your skill with something is developing a craft. And then to express, okay.
Yeah, I'm trying.
Let's see. Okay, there. Is that better? Yeah. To convey an idea, feeling, or personal meaning, and then to edit and prioritize. So what if it is that I want to draw a tree? Can I draw every single leaf and branch on that tree? No, I'm going to have to kind of edit what's there and prioritize what I want to focus on. Is it just the color that I want to focus on? Is it that I just give the impression of a few leaves by being detailed in some areas and not in others? Or am I going to spend 10 years drawing every single leaf? Okay. But it's to edit and make decisions and prioritize. Another habit of an artist is to observe. To pay really close attention and to see things in a new way, right? Because our brains like to think symbolically, but an artist is able to look at something for its shape and texture qualities, or to be able to, like the example of Monet and the Rouen Cathedral, to see the effects of the light at the different times of day, right? Or to see the proportions of a face and that we aren't just two dots and a U, right? To really figure out how to put those things together in shapes. And then to find the relationships between objects. And then after something is completed, we reflect and find meaning and a way to explain what it is that we created. And then maybe to question and evaluate with our own criteria whether we're satisfied with what it is that we've created. And then to apply that understanding in future projects and, you know, really understand how things fit together.
whether it be in a drawing or some other kind of creation.
How would you apply this to the rocket ship cereal box scenario?
Like the reflect?
The reflect part, yeah.
Okay, well, you could say, does this look really cool? Okay. And then evaluate, like those experiments, does this tape work better or this tape look better? What could we use to make this look more real? Do you really like how this looks? And then you can apply some of that understanding to the next time, right? And it could be that you don't make a rocket ship again. He makes something else again, but he already knows how those materials interact with each other. And you can apply that understanding that you gained with the cereal box and the plastic water bottle to some other creation. Or say you tried to paint on that plastic water bottle and the paint wouldn't stick. Okay? Right? So now you start learning, I wonder what I would need to do to make paint stick to the water bottle. Maybe there is a kind that would. Maybe next time I'll try to spray paint it. Right? But that's understanding that you can apply to another situation. Right? And so these are all habits we want our kids to have. Right? These are all habits we want our kids to have. The last one is to make connections. I think it's important for us to realize that art history is human history. Right? Art is uniquely human expression. And our written language came from art. Our spoken language came from singing and art, right? All of these things, it's part of us as human beings. And so when we can really connect to the humanities, visual art, music, theater, then we can really get into all of what it means to be a human being. And so then we can make comparisons and realize, like, those kids that lived in caves were like me, right? I'm drawing here on my MagnaDoodle, and they just drew in the dirt. And then we can learn how we have changed over time and what people do nowadays. And we can draw on our iPad. Then we develop empathy and appreciation for all creation. When you have made something, when you've drawn a picture, and then you look at a picture that someone else has drawn, you can really have more appreciation for that work of art that you're looking at because you've experienced it. You know what it took, and you know that there was some skill and some time involved in the creation of that artwork. And you also can realize that the other people that you have around you and come in contact with have those same capacities too. And you can find links between disciplines and cultures and time periods. And what are these symbols that we use over and over and over again? You know, and what kind of symbols does this culture use that our culture uses? And what does this culture use and our culture doesn't? Or it means something else for us, right? But we can find those links and make connections. And then we can make new ones. That's what artists do. So these are all habits that we want our kids to do and to have, right? And these are like the habits of a scientist, right? These are the habits of a real literary genius. But these are the habits of someone who is creative and really is in touch with their potential to influence and make things happen. And the reason art is so helpful for our children is because they can do this without a whole lot of risk or consequences. You don't have to mark any of their art problems wrong like you do in a math exploration. You don't even have to have the experiment work the way the book said it was supposed to, like you do in a science experiment. This can be, this is what I want to do, and I'm going to try it, and go through all these habits without the constraints of a lot of what happens in our other kinds of work in our schools. So how to teach in a way that will help develop these habits for our kids? I think it's really helpful just to introduce media instead of projects or assignments. So you don't say, I want you to draw a lizard with these this way. Okay? You say, we're going to figure out what we can do with graphite today. We're going to use pencils and draw and make all sorts of different marks and get familiar with that. Or paint. Or crayons. Or chalk. Or clay, you know. And then you help kids get familiar with a medium with experimentation. And then you can move to guided projects from your own instruction, books, or, you know, internet tutorials or whatever. Once they understand some ways to use a medium, how to clean up, and care for the supplies, let them have access to it. It is a little bit risky, right? But let them have access to it so when they get an idea, they can start to make. Remember that the medium is a tool to implement the habits of an artist. And so you can just be like, okay, this is not a precious commodity. This is a tool to help them grow. And then emphasize the process and not the result. Did everyone get all that?
No.
Take your pictures and then I'll switch. So how do we create an environment to encourage art making? Let there be ready access to art supplies where they can be seen and reached. And this really depends on your family, right? And what stage and ages your kids are. But have paper and pencils and crayons, probably not Sharpies, available, you know, when you have toddlers. Have them out where they can get to them. Teach them how to use them properly and then respect their ability to do that. And then keep related art media together in one tub or bucket, especially the special stuff that you keep out of reach. So like paints and brushes, just have a tub that is the painting stuff. Okay? And then when you're going to do painting, you just get that out. It's all together. And then I really like to have tables at child height, especially with little ones. They like to stand. They don't want to sit. And so it just makes it to have some kind of surface that they can walk around, stand at, is really useful. And then realize that art takes time. Sometimes that's hard for us to be like, you're not doing anything. Go back to those habits of an artist, right? They are doing something, right? Even if they're just spending a lot of time trying to draw a perfect circle, it's okay. Uh-huh.
What happens if you have someone who's a perfectionist and you tell them it's okay if you mess up because art can be messy and they just can't wrap their brain around that?
Give them some. So if you have a kid that's a perfectionist, we're all going to have some of those. And so some of it you can just say it's okay, you're going to mess up. Give them ways to say, ooh, maybe, you know, if they're drawing a picture, say maybe, oh, we can turn this stray mark into a leaf. We, you know, see how they can take those mistakes they've made and incorporate them in and be more creative with it. And then also let them be a perfectionist and give them rulers and compasses and stencils and all those kinds of things and show them how to make designs geometrically. And let them experiment like that. Different kids have different tendencies, right? And part of the purpose of this is that we help them be themselves and help them to do things that they're uncomfortable with. Right. Do something else. So you could get tracing paper and just retrace it without the mistake. You know, there's all sorts of ways you can deal with that. If you have a kid that's super loosey-goosey all the time, don't try to constrain them into being a perfectionist. And if you have a perfectionist, don't make them feel like it's not okay. Give them some tools to help them make things to their satisfaction. So tracing paper is super helpful. Or scanning it into the computer, printing out what they've already done, and getting rid of the mistake. I mean, you can do things like that to help them feel successful, right? That's part of the problem solving of making something. And then do it with them. Moms, do it with them. Don't let it just be the thing that you say, okay, here you go. I'm going to go do my thing while you are occupied here with your crayons. Do it with them. So, and make mistakes yourself, right? Make mistakes yourself. So Mo Willems, in the interview I read with him, the other thing he said is that kids start to think that drawing is just for babies because the teacher doesn't do it. And so it's something that adults don't do. And a lot of us don't. A lot of us, we get to like age 10 and we think we're not good. Well, look at Mo Willems' drawings, right? They're super simple, but they communicate so much, right? We do not have to be full photorealistic drawers, right? It is a human capacity, and we get to practice that. You saw that painting by Paul Klee? He's got those in the Museum of Modern Art. It's just a lot of swirls. You could do that, right? And be okay with it. Be okay with it. And let yourself get over the perfectionist. Yeah, so there can be comparison. And that, I think, is valuable. Okay. You can say, I'm 38, so I've had this many years of practice to do this, right? Or you can start looking at some modern art and say, but look, you are a modern artist. Look at this drawing by Picasso, okay? He's not looking for photorealism, but he's communicating something here, and then you figure out what that is, okay? Yeah, you could show them an example and then just hide it. Yeah, there can be all sorts of different ways you approach that, and maybe you don't do the same project as them, but you're doing something else so that there's not a comparison, but it's really nice to, or, right, they're doing their own project. This is the thing they want to do. You do something completely different, but you're just there with them at art time. Okay, so here's embracing the mess. I think this is the hardest part about really wanting to do art with your kids, is it's messy. It's inherently messy, right? And we know that God created this world out of a mess and created some order. It's gonna be messy. And so just tell yourself that. It's gonna be messy. It's going to be messy. It's going to be messy. And just be okay.
Like this, okay? So my brain does not do this.
Well, but your brain can do this.
I don't know how.
Right? And but whose kids feel that way? Right? Your kids, that's how your kids feel. They often, I can't do this. I don't know how. It is so important. So one Christmas, my husband got a unicycle. For Christmas. This isn't necessarily the same thing, but it's the same thing, okay? He could not ride the unicycle. He couldn't ride the unicycle, but he got a unicycle for Christmas. And so every day he went outside and rode the unicycle. So, and my kids would make a mark for where he started, and then with the sidewalk chalk, make a mark to how far he got that day. Well, it used to be like one sidewalk square, right? And so you draw with your kids and you draw one stick figure, right? And then the next time you do it with them, you go three sidewalk squares, okay? It is so important for your kids to see you do things you don't want to do and that are hard because you're making them do that all the time. You're making them do math problems they don't want to do. You're making them read books they don't want to do. You do things you don't want to do so that your kids will. Sorry, that is just so important.
And so I've got a son that he draws grids. And his sketchbook is usually full of math equations and computer coding, right? But then he'll draw a picture and he'll draw his little portrait and grid it off. So here's some things. But it's really, have a big vinyl tablecloth or a tarp to put on your table and maybe on the floor. Just have one that can be a disaster, right? That you fold up and put away, but you have something protective. Just get that, okay? And I really like to have drawing boards. We have, you can use clipboards, but I have some like 18-inch by 24-inch pieces of plywood that are just kind of sanded on the edges that are smooth. They're just quarter inch thick, and we tape paper to those or put those on the table to paint on top of to protect your surfaces. Like, protect your house. That's what artists do. Okay, so have real supplies. Art and drawing boards are really important. And then don't be too precious about organizing your supplies Pinterest worthy, right? You can look at like a Montessori homeschool blog and see like all their color-coded, colored pencils. It's not real life in your home. And don't expect it to be like that. Have a bucket of colored pencils and have a bucket of markers. And then you can have it contained. They could even be cute if you need them to be. But put them out where they can be seen and used, okay? Yogurt containers, Ziploc bags.
IKEA is super cheap.
And IKEA is, yeah. And I have all little IKEA drawers if you live near an IKEA. And then just relax about the mess in the moment. And then have a scheduled cleanup time and don't worry about it until then. Let it get messy. And then you know that when 12 o'clock comes around, you guys are all going to work together to clean it up. Okay? And then chill out until you get to that time. It's been super helpful for me as a homeschool mom. My oldest is 16 and my youngest is now 5. And I have 6 in there. But when I realized that I could just set, like, we're going to have 12 o'clock cleanup and 4 o'clock cleanup. That's how we do our day. And it doesn't always happen, but I just set the timer for 10 minutes. We clean up. Everyone knows that's what happens. I do not have to be stressed out about the mess the rest of the time. It revolutionized my life. So just give yourself that container. Like, you know when the end is, and you can clean up then, and have a place to put projects in progress. They still need to clean up their supplies, but then just have a place to put projects in progress. So here's my kids. Like, so here's the drawing boards you can see kind of in the basket under those the calendar and the clock. Those are my pieces of plywood. They're clean and pretty there, and this is my, he's now 8, but, you know, we had our art supplies out where he could always find them. But he didn't draw on walls, I was lucky. But the vinyl tablecloth, right? And then you know the mess is going to happen. And some days it's going to be a disaster, like pencil sharpener shavings all over the place. But then you teach them how to vacuum, and that's just part of it, right? So drawing is the basis of visual literacy. And it's really the mother of all art media. So if it's all you do, that's fine. Just do it. A lot. And do it with your kids sometimes, even if it is not your thing, right? Math is not my thing, but I do it with my little kids, okay? I've got to make myself do hard things. We all have to, okay? So this is so important for the mind to the hand, the mind to the hand. And so let your kids draw from the time they're little tiny, and don't discourage it. Don't, just let them do it. Because a picture is worth 1,000 words. If you have a teacher, you know, that draws a diagram for you, it makes things make more sense, okay? Visual communication is really important. And drawing is not just for artists. It's not. It's a human
thing. I want you to, that's what I want you to get. It's a human thing. And it's not just for babies, that Mo Willems quote I talked about, that it's not just something kids do and adults don't. And there's three main kinds of drawing that I'll talk about in the few minutes that I've got. Well, I've got a few. Imaginative drawing, guided drawing, and observational drawing. And I'll go into these in the next slides. So imaginative drawing, this...
It's okay.
Did it again.
Thank you.
Okay. So imaginative drawing, this is the first thing that happens. This is a two-year-old. It's a self-portrait and then a picture of Uncle Mark with his glasses and his beard. And then there's a duck, right? But these are things that she had in her mind that she put out on paper. So this is, what? Yeah. But this is just something that you draw out of your head, imaginative drawing. And it's the first drawing we do, but it's just experiential. It's part of just the action of doing it over and over and over again. And kids usually go through these same developmental stages where, like, the people are a head with arms and legs out of the head, okay? And so it's just a natural evolution. We all do the same thing. And it often becomes symbolic, like a circle with lines for the sun or dots and a curved line to equal a face. Imaginative drawing eventually often morphs to symbolic drawing, but it's also just things you draw out of your head. And we should all do this at every age, but little ones under 5 or 6 shouldn't be expected to do anything other than this. Don't expect them to do anything else. And don't try to give them instructions, okay? Because then they'll start thinking that they really have to draw a sun that's a circle with the lines coming out of it. Okay. Then there's guided drawing. And this is instructed line-by-line drawing, either by a demonstration or from a how-to-draw book. And it helps build confidence and ability to follow directions for elementary-aged children. So I had an art teacher in college who said, no, never, never, never do how to draw books. But my kids love them, and they're fun. And it helps you follow directions and start to gain some skills of like, oh, this is how I could create this relationship of this line to make a sense of space, like a leg that overlaps another leg or whatever it is. It's helpful for kids. And it's fun for older kids, too. And then there's observational drawing. And this is where you're looking at something and drawing it. Most artists draw from observation of some kind or another. They use some kind of reference material. Michelangelo did not just draw people out of his head. He studied, right? And he looked at how muscles and bones and skin all work together and had models come in and worked from models. Real artists draw from observation and not just out of their head. And kids are ready somewhere between 8 and 10 years old, and then I realized I put this picture up of Ian, who's like 4, I think, at this time. But whenever they want to, try without feeling frustrated by it. And here's some pictures of us doing some observational drawing. We like to set little things up on the table or go outside and do nature studies. Okay. But here's all different kinds of media. We've got all the markers out. Everyone's got their sketchbook. There's pencils, and my daughter is drawing on her iPad there. So here's the essential drawing supplies. Pencils. You need to have some pencils, just regular yellow ones, mechanical pencils. I like triangular-shaped pencils for little people. And you can have the bigger ones, but I think the narrow ones are fine, but it helps them to hold their pencil correctly. And I think it's good to build those habits. And a pencil sharpener and erasers. We like those plastic, the white plastic ones. And then some kind of pens. Sharpies are really nice to use. And so if you can't have your Sharpies out where your kids can reach them, you can put them in a place where the kids allowed to use them can reach them, and not where the little people can reach them. And I love Prismacolor pencils. They're the best colored pencils. And I think it's worth investing in good art supplies because that eliminates frustration. And even if you just have a few, it's better to have a few really good quality things than a lot of junk. Because your kids' artwork will end up being the same quality of the material as they use to make it. That's just like your house or the airplane you ride in, right? The materials really matter. And then paper, lots of it. I have sketchbooks for all my kids, so I don't have pieces of paper all over the house, but I inevitably have pieces of paper all over the house all the time. And plain copy paper is great to use. And then colored cardstock and construction paper. I like colored cardstock better. I like the texture of it. And the Prismacolor pencils really draw nicely on the surface of the cardstock. And then here's some extras. Oil pastels. I like the Staedtler brand or the Crepaz. And they're good. Chalk pastels. And I think the cheap ones here are just fine. Markers. And we like this Crayola Super Tips and then some Sharpies. My teenage daughter has some Prismacolor markers that are really nice, but she is an art kid, and so they're worth the investment for her. But I think a lot of times Crayolas are really good. And then we really like Bear Books from bearbooks.com. These are little bound books. They have a white cover and white pages inside. You can get some that have lines for them to draw, write stories on, or you can just get them totally blank. But I've got a bookshelf full of all of these books that my kids have filled with stories because they had a book to fill it in. And it was just because they had that blank book that inspired the writing and the drawing. It was the material that was so enticing for them to do that. And they are so cheap, so cheap. They're just a dollar or two a piece. And I just buy them in stacks. And then it's so fun to look through them later. And sometimes they use those as their bedtime stories. And then when you're doing observational drawing, I think it's nice to have compressed charcoal or Conte crayons. And then some nicer drawing paper, like a pad of just Strathmore drawing paper. Okay. Oh, I only have 5 minutes left. Okay, so here's some blank books with, you can see. So painting supplies. I'm going to email these to everyone, so I should get everyone's email addresses so you can get the slides. So you'll just have this, but I'm just going to quickly go through. I love watercolors, and I think having quality watercolors is helpful. You don't want anything that's got kind of a shiny finish over it if you get a pan of watercolors. Sometimes the praying ones are okay, but really, I get these Winsor & Newton Coatman ones, and they last forever. They really last a while, and I let my little kids use them. Just a pad of watercolor paper. I think the Strathmore stuff you can get at Michael's is fine. And I actually really love these Crayola brushes. They're nice, they're cheap, but they work really well. For painted paper projects, I really like the Crayola washable paint better than any kind of tempera paint. And acrylic paint. So the cheap craft paints are fun to paint with if you just want to use the color out of the tube. If you want to do color mixing, you need to buy artist quality acrylic paints so that the pigments stay true to themselves when you mix them together. Because it will be really frustrating to take like a little
craft paint of red and yellow and mix them together, it's not going to be the orange you think it's going to be. So buy little things of quality artist colors. And I like golden paint. It's expensive. But even some of the Liquitex artist basics, or like I know Hobby Lobby has their own brand, those are better than the craft paints if you want to work with color mixing. And then buy a lot of canvases. You can get them at Joann's in a pack. And then gesso for recovering your used and reusing your canvases. So here's us watercoloring. Here's canvases, and there's me recovering them so they can paint on them again. And I just save them by taking a picture. So here you can see the personalities of my two different children. So here's my 5-year-old Eva on the left, who painted her princess. And she did not draw it or anything first. She just went at it. Okay, that is her personality. And then on the right, you see Ian, who made rectangles and overlapped things and then had the mixed color where those two colors overlapped. That is his personality. Okay? And so let them do that their own way. That's why it's helpful not to have preconceived assignments, but just working with a medium. Collage supplies, this is super fun, and it's really fun with little kids. I love Eric Carle style painted paper collage things. So you need all this kind of stuff, and I will email these slides to you. And printmaking, this is my thing, I love printmaking. But you can just take your egg cartons, styrofoam egg cartons, to do printmaking and make stamps out of them. We just use a pencil or a ballpoint pen to draw something on it, and then you just take your ink pad, your stamp ink pad, push it upside down all over that piece of styrofoam, and then you can put your paper on top of it, rub the back, and you get the print. But you can do multiples that way, and learn about, you know, Hunter's name there is backwards, so we had to figure out, like, why did that happen? What could we do different? And so then they had to practice writing their names backwards so that when they printed them, they would come out. So here's our stack of styrofoam meat trays and egg cartons. My kids really love it. It's fun to make multiples because you can give one to grandma and your mom. Okay, and then here's a class I taught. They were carving rubber to make their prints, and we did several colors. We did whatever they carved away was white, and we printed a gray, and then they carved again, and whatever they carved away was gray, and then we printed black on top of that. This was block printing, and so I just rolled the ink on there. But these are middle school-aged kids. Here's some of their prints they made. Working in 3D, Play-Doh, and I actually left my favorite recipe up in my room. I just realized now. But I'll email that to you, too, if you want it. I like Crayola Model Magic. It's fun. And the Crayola Air Dry Clay is suitable. It's just ceramics are hard to do at home. But you can recycle all sorts of stuff. Get a low-heat glue gun and make stuff with clay. Here's my kids making stuff with clay. And then here's digital tools. But I'm going to show you this. It's fun to watch. This is Brenna on her iPad with the Procreate app, but it actually records everything that happens and shows her process. It's called Procreate, Procreat. Yeah, whoops. So that's the finished. All right. And then here's more resources. So I will just email these, and these will also be on the LDSHU website with the recording. But there's lots of fun things. My kids love Art Hub for Kids, YouTube channel that tells you how to draw things. And it's helpful to have some of that guided drawing and then some of their own kinds of projects. There's Great Artist Mom. She does kind of the same things. I like the Artful Parent for little kids. Ugh,
and drawing on the right side of the brain. And then Google Arts and Culture. You can go to the website and find a famous painting and then zoom in super close. So here I found the Van Gogh painting, and then you can zoom in and see all the brushstrokes.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a non-profit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.
Thank you so much for coming in today. It's good to see everyone, and if you have any questions, I'll be up here for a few minutes.